What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we are going to be talking about a ton, a metric ton of books that come out this week. So many books that we're going to get right into it and kick it off with a big one.
A lot of people are going to speculate that, you know, in The Stack, we'll be talking about Ms. Marvel's death, and Justin also has disappeared and maybe died. So, you know, coincidence or are they the same?
I guess we'll find out, not with this book, but with the next book. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Stranger Things, number one, from IDW Dark Horse Comics, written by Cameron Chittock, art by Pharaoh Pei. This is exactly what it says on the box. The Stranger Thing kids head to New York City for a school vacation, school trip, that's what it's called. Of course, there's some stuff going on that brings the world of TMNT and Stranger Things together. Pete, I know you were pretty stoked for this. How do you think they brought everything together?
I mean, I was a little surprised that the group at Stranger Things don't know about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, the fact that they were like, I'm sorry, is your name Michelangelo? I mean, that part, you know, was a little bit like, you don't know who the fucking turtles are. But other than that small little moment, I loved every bit of it. Yeah, the art reminded me a little bit of the old Eastman and Laird style. I just was very happy with this team up, even though it was kind of like just putting two things together. I still was like, yay, wee! I wasn't kind of like blown away by the plot or anything, but I'm still having a good time with it.
Yeah, exactly. It does exactly what you need it to do in terms of having a mashup of this stuff. It hits all the Stranger Things characters correctly. It hits all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles characters correctly. There's a mild spoiler here, but of course they figure out a way to take Demo Dogs and Mausers and literally mash them up together. There's a fun little teaser about what's actually going on here that brings these two worlds together at the end. And, you know, it's used in some New York stuff. Hopefully they'll continue with it as they go. I like the idea of seeing these Stranger Things kids in 1980s New York's. My one quibble that I'm going to throw out there is there is a scene in the subway, and they have to create a distraction in the subway. And the distraction they cause is on a MetroCard machine, which didn't exist then. Not in any way at all. I know that's very stupid, I live in New York, and you used to live in New York, but like I was staring at that paddle for so long because I was like, is that supposed to be something else? Because there's like carnival tickets popping out of this thing. But no, I think it's they saw a visual reference for a MetroCard machine. They're like, yeah, that's the thing. That's in the subway. But back in the day, not only were there not MetroCards, there was tokens. Yeah, I used to go around with like so many tokens in my pockets. It was stupid.
I still have a couple of tokens. They were cool. Yeah, it sucked when they got rid of those. But, you know, they probably were getting a lot of fake coins put in the thing. So,
yeah, fake coins put in the things. And also, tokens were cool. But having 50 tokens in your pockets at all times is ridiculous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. It's easier to just kind of swipe. Mm-hmm. It's also not now you just kind of you can just I just touch the credit card to the thing. Now I don't even have to get a Metro card or deal with any of that.
They should have set this. That's what this should have been about, is being able to use Omni to tap your phone to the All right, anyway, we're getting lost in the weeds here. This is a good book. If you're a fan of either property, I think you're going to enjoy this.
I agree.
Next up, as teased by Pete earlier on, Fallen Friend, The Death of Ms. Marvel, number one, from Marvel, written by G. Willow Wilson, Fallen Mark Waid, and Saladin Ahmed. Art by Takeshi Miyazawa, Humberto Ramos, and Andrea DeVito. This is bringing together three teams who have dealt very heavily with Ms. Marvel. One, the team from Ms. Marvel. The second one from Challengers? No, champions. And the third one from a more modern run on Ms. Marvel, as well as working in some stuff from the Spider-Man run where she was killed off. And this is all bouncing around different aspects of Ms. Marvel as her friends and family and heroes she worked with pay tribute to each other, to her. We've been very negative on this storyline, but just taking on its own, how did you feel about this book?
Well, it's hard to just take it on its own. But I will for a moment and talk about the positives. I thought it was very moving. The part at the end where Spider-Man shows up and says Ms. Marvel was his hero, like, got me. I was like, oh, that hit me good. Captain America being in a mosque. Those are powerful images, and I think they were very cool, and I loved it. It's just hard. I think killing off Ms. Marvel is dumb, and I'm sad we're still here. So that part of it is the only kind of negative thing. But I really enjoyed the issue as kind of like this cool homage to Ms. Marvel and talking about how great she was. So like I was happy for all the kind of like cameos and stuff that we got and how important she is as a character. I'm just kind of like, I can't believe that we're still going through with this because I don't like it as an idea. But I thought it was a very moving issue.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here that it is entirely unnecessary that it happened. I was dreading most of the issue, the inevitable reveal at the end of like, surprise, she's alive. And I'm glad they didn't go that route because at least they were let the teams pretend we're not ending up there eventually because we all know we are. Like you said, just in terms of representation, I don't want to speak for any other groups or anything like that, but having this general acceptance of Muslim people, of people who are worshiping Islam and paying tribute to people both through the culture and the religion, I thought that's very good. Like, it is good to have that sort of positive
images of it. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's super important. You know what I mean? Because it's unfortunately gets kind of painted in a negative connotation. So it's nice to see it in a positive light for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So in that sense, I'm glad it exists. And I like all of these writers and artists. So I'm glad to read that. Yeah. But it's still a frustrating read at the same time, which in my mind takes away a lot from the emotional impact because I'm so annoyed by this storyline and this plot point that it has to exist that it's hard for me to connect emotionally in the way that I should be connecting with the book. But that said, there you go. Let's move on. Talk about World's Finest Teen Titans, number one from DC Comics, written once again by Mark Waid, art by Emanuela Lupacino. This is going back to the original Teen Titans team, now still teens, but in a more modern context. It actually feels to me, it was funny reading these sort of back to back, it feels to me a little bit like what Mark Waid was doing on Champions, except with the Teen Titans. And I don't mind that because I like Champions and I like his take on Champions. And I think it works here. How'd you feel about it, Pete?
Yeah, I really liked it. I think this Waid guy is a good writer. You guys should look out for his stuff because it's pretty impressive. First off, some amazing covers. I love the way it started with the Not Today Satan reference. That was fun. But you got to see kind of Robin dealing with this leadership mantle, which I like for him. I'm not a teen, but I was one time. And you have this thing about like trying to be your own, what you think is right, but also your parents really kind of pushing your agenda. So I love the back and forth where you had Robin kind of getting a lecture from Batman about leadership and then him kind of struggling with how to deal with that himself. And I thought that was a cool kind of moment that I think does represent what it's like to be teens. You have these like teachers and students all telling you what to do, what to say, who to be, and you have this kind of rebellious, I can do this, give me a chance kind of feeling. And it's captured in an interesting way here. So I really liked it.
And I'll give a shout out to Emanuela Lupacino's art, which is just this great, really clean superhero art. It reminds me a little bit of what Cliff Chiang does sometimes, but it's different enough. And overall, enjoyable book. If you're looking for a good Teen Titans book is the one to check out. Next up, Fish Flies, number one from Image Comics by Jeff Lemire. Now, if you picked up the free Comic Book Day version of this, that was actually just the first half or so of this book. You don't even really get the concept until the very last page. This is creepy as heck, particularly if
gross.
You don't like...
It's gross, dude.
It's gross.
It's just straight
it is
up
about
gross.
A convenience store robbery that goes wrong, that leads to a dude being bitten by a bunch of fish flies. He befriends a snotty-nosed kid who feels very alone, and things spiral in weird directions from there.
That's funny that you say that, because I think this book is about bugs and the fact that they're fucking gross. And then, you know, like, just imagine having a lot of them in one place just really freaks you out. The part where he has to take his shoes off and walk across the bugs kind of made me think of like a Indiana Jones moment where he's like, he has to keep going, but there's bugs everywhere. And it's like, just go home, man. Run home. It's not worth it. But yeah, it's like you said, there's more going on. But, you know, Jeff Lemire likes to kind of walk this line of like this interesting kind of idea and then also some kind of bug slash animal crossover moment. So it's Jeff Lemire being Jeff Lemire, but this time it's bugs. I think it's, you know, all that silliness aside and all my...
I love the... I'm completely stuck on the idea of you cut to the Image Comics office and they're like, so, Jeff, you've been on a real run here. All your stuff has been really good. What's your next pitch? And he's like, I don't know. Bugs are fucking gross.
Like, we great. Love that for you, Jeff.
Sounds good. Keep coasting on that sweet tooth money, buddy.
Dude, come on. He's not coasting. This guy's worked really hard.
He's working very hard.
Yeah, he cranks out a lot of amazing material.
He's doing a lot
material.
Of work, okay? Yeah. He's very tired. He's very tired and
Stop.
He deserves to rest.
No, this is an original idea.
Jeffy, if you're listening to this, go to sleep, baby. Go to sleep, okay? It's
don't
very
talk
late.
To him like that.
You got to work very hard,
he's
baby.
Not,
Jeffy, baby.
He's not your kid. Stop talking to him like that. It's really weird. Yeah. Anyways.
Weird you think I talk to my kid like that.
I think you do. I just think that this is an interesting idea. In this first one, we're just kind of getting a weird premise. I'm very interested to see where this goes. But the art is just absolutely spectacular. It very much reminds me of Sweet Tooth in a creative, interesting way. So I think if you like Sweet Tooth, it's worth checking this out.
I will say, without getting into specific spoilers for the ending, most of this book is very gross, like we're talking about, particularly if you like bugs, but hate bugs. But the place that it ends up, it feels like it could be heading towards a really messed up, weird version of the Iron Giant. So,
oh, wow.
We'll see. We'll see.
I
what
thought
happens.
You were going to say The Fly.
I mean, that too. Why don't we move on and talk about Sirens of the City, number one from Boom Studios, written by Joanne Starr, art by Kari Randolph. This is following a girl who is alone and pregnant in the 1990s, I think, mid to late 90s. I feel like it's grunge, so let's just say. And she's wandering around the city, doesn't know what's going on. It turns out she may, in fact, be a siren per the title. And in fact, there's a lot of other mythological monsters that are out there over the course of the book. What'd you think, Pete?
I love this. I really thought it was very cool and creative. There was one thing that I wasn't ready for at the end that I'll talk about in a minute. But I also really liked the use of color in this book. I thought they did a great job of kind of like highlighting moments with the use of color. So shout out to the colorists who did an amazing job on this book. This is very creative and cool. But what's weird is you think we have this unique special character, but as the story goes on, they become less and less special, which is a weird thing where it's like you kind of think you're rolling with one of the greats, and then you're like, this might be a B-team type of thing. Like, what?
I 100% agree with you.
Like, I was into it, and then as it went on, I was like, wait a second, that character looks cooler. Like, what are we doing?
I totally agree with you. The this started off off with such a strong metaphor of a girl on her own, having nothing and using her rage and her voice unknowingly to control and coerce people. And I was like, oh, I am into this. This story is fascinating. Let's see how far we can push the metaphor, how far we can go. And then, and this is getting into spoilers, like you're saying, but then she falls in with this art dude who I was like, okay, this is interesting. Let's follow this. And he takes her to a party. And as soon as she gets to the party, everybody's like, oh, I think she's a siren. And also, this is another siren. And we're vampires. And there's werewolves.
Yeah, we're vampires.
And I was like, what? Can control no, all too animals. Much. Too much, too quickly. Yeah. Cut it out. And yeah, I love Kari Randolph's art. Big fan. Oh, I love amazing. The first like 2/3 of this book enough that I definitely want to pick up the second issue. But if this is just supernatural mashup and that's all it becomes, that's a bummer because the first part is so interesting and I'm willing to follow like, what's it like to be a siren down on your luck in the art scene in the 1990s? That's interesting.
And then spoilers, but the last panel, you see the Twin Towers in the background and I wasn't ready for that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, oh, it's in the 90s. But I just see it, and it's just kind of like, oh, man. Oh, that's so weird.
And yeah. Did you feel the same way when you're seeing Transformers Rise of the Beasts?
What do you mean?
Oh, just the same thing happened in the trailer. There was a shot of the Twin Towers, and I was like, what are we doing here? I don't want to see Transformers fighting in front of the Twin Towers. Stop it. Why did you set it here? What's wrong with you? You didn't. Nobody asked you to do that.
It's a bit much when you're not ready for it. You're just kind of like, ah.
Not every movie has to be the end of Remember Me. Who gets that?
It's
reference?
Funny. This is a little dark, but my friend used to, he works at the 9/11 memorial and he wears like a jacket and it says like 9/11 on it. Mm-hmm. And so like if he's riding on the train and someone will look at him, just be like, oh, fuck, man. Oh, God. You know, you're just like you're reminding somebody of something horrible when they're not ready for it. They're just like, come on, dude. I was having a good day and you had to fucking walk by with your jacket on and. You know, it's just like, oh, man, yeah.
All right, well, why don't we move on from this discussion to talk about Ponya, the Mummy's Curse, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Chris Roberson, art by Christopher Mitten. This is set in the world of Hellboy and mostly a Egyptian mystical story. Pete, you really like this one, though.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you were going to say Ponyo, and I got really excited. It's first off, it's got the kind of art style of Hellboy, which is really cool. That always gets me. Does it seem like to you like this is a one and done issue?
I don't know. I know I should check these things before we tape, but I'm not sure.
Because the way it ended, I was like, is this the last that we get? But I really love
I think there's probably more of it.
Okay, cool. Because they have this kind of like interesting thing throughout this cat versus the snake. And it was such a cool little story that kind of then gets strung along throughout the adventures here. And I thought it was just every time it kind of got brought up was very cool and unique. This light versus kind of dark battle that happens. And I loved it. What's going on right now in Hellboy is there's a lot of different storytelling, and it's really cool to get all these kind of little peeks into these little corners of the Hellboy universe. And there's so many creative stories that we can get. And this is a great example of one.
X-Men Days of Future Past Doomsday, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Manuel Garcia. The Googs. This is, after years and years, giving us a prequel story to Days of Future Past, showing how we got to the post-apocalyptic future that we joined up with in that classic X-Men story. I didn't know what to expect getting into this, so I was very surprised by the premise, but I thought it worked. And I thought it really worked on the level of, like, Guggenheim clearly driving down in the fractured political state we're in right now, the rise of misinformation, the rise of fascism in the U.S. government, to be frank, ideas like that and things that we've seen at play, particularly over the past couple of years, and weaving that into a modern context for a story that was decades earlier, I thought was very smart and made it very resonant for what's happening today. I also really appreciated seeing this classic X-Men story and seeing how they fell apart, even though it gets very, very dark, as you might expect at certain points.
Yeah, it really does. I want to just first talk about like the nostalgia factor. This feels like kind of 90s X-Men, early X-Men stuff. It has that great kind of old school comic feel. So I very much enjoyed kind of going back in this little time machine but feels very kind of relevant today, like Alex was talking about. This was an emotional roller coaster, though, for sure. I mean, the different stuff where we see Wolverine and Magneto and all this kind of, it's just like, holy shit. So, yeah, it's very interesting. It's very cool. It's there's some tough stuff in it, though. So, I enjoyed it, but also part of me was like, I don't know, this is too much sometimes. But man, I'll be interested to check out more. But yeah, what a freaking start for sure.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. Let's move on to our Night Terrors block. We kick this off.
Night Terrors block!
We kicked this off last week, and this is DC's big event that they're running throughout the summer. We did the same thing last year with Future State, where we talked about all the books that are happening, and I always think it's interesting to talk about an entire event as a whole, see how it's panning out across the line. Here, the concept is the new villain called Insomnia has plunged the entire
DC. You having trouble sleeping, bro? Welcome to DC Comics!
Yeah, it's really never messed sleep up. Again. Batman, there's a whole issue where Batman is standing by the fridge and he's like, I want to have a snack. Have a snack, then I'm not going to fall back asleep. But maybe if I do, like I'm stuck. I'm stuck in this place. Anyway, no, this villain called Insomnia is looking for something called the Nightmare Stone that is hidden in the dreams of a hero somewhere in the DC universe. The only one who could stop him, or at least we thought the only one who could stop him, is Deadman, who is currently in the body of Batman running around.
Oh, what a fun idea.
Yes. And so what we're getting over the course of this event, at least in the first week, was we're getting to see everybody's nightmares. Here in the second week, we get something a little bit different. I'm going to read through all the titles and then we can kind of talk about them individually as well as a whole. We've got Night Terrors number one, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Giuseppe Caroncoli, Stefano Nasi, and Casper Wingard. Night Terrors Zatanna number one, written by Dennis Culver, art by David Baldion. Night Terrors The Flash number one, written by Alex Pacdendal, art by Daniel Bay. Night Terrors Robin number one, written by Kenny Porter, art by Miguel Mendoza. Night Terrors Green Lantern number one, written by Jeremy Adams and Alex Segura, art by Eduardo Pensica and Mario Fox Ficillo, and Night Terrors Shazam number one, written by Mark Wade, art by Roger Cruz. Now, Pete, what did you want to say?
Yeah, shout out to the Mark Wade again. This guy is all over the place, man. He's a pretty big deal. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. First off, the covers for this event to make it worth it for the event alone. Like I haven't been this blown away by covers in a long time, where they're just so unique and kind of like make you stop to be like, hey, what the fuck is this comic about? You know, just some nightmarish, super creative, amazing covers across the board. Yeah, a lot to kind of get into here, but yeah, the kind of Night Terrors number one was, I think, a great kind of like a start for this thing. Dead Man kind of joyriding in Batman's body a little bit. It's got the Batmobile. This, even though it's this kind of dark story, there's some hints of lightness to it, which I really appreciated. The Flash one, though, was kind of fucked up. Like, he loses his shit on Gorilla Grodd, and I was like, yo, Flash, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Well, just to talk about them broadly for a second, I just want to say, yeah. I know it was like, negative is probably way too strong for how I felt about last week. I just felt like it was very samey. They felt like a repetitive in terms of the issues. This week was great. And it was great because there were a lot of different takes on what a nightmare could be like here in the books. You also, I think what helped it a lot was Night Terrors number one. Like you were saying, there's some big revelations here in terms of Insomnia that I thought were really interesting and I wasn't expecting in terms of the direction of the character. We also get a great twist at the end of the issue in terms of a returning character. This could be teaming up with Deadman.
Oh, very fun.
But then also, just to spoil a little bit of the Night Terrors Zatanna number one, and we find this out in Night Terrors, Deadman isn't the only person who's still awake in this world. So in Night Terrors Zatanna, we get Zatanna teaming up with Robot Man from the Doom Patrol, kind of against her will, to fight somebody else who has come out during this whole sleeping sickness that's in the DC universe. So that was a fun riff that's tying into the event as well. And then, like you said, like The Flash was a really messed up book and an upsetting book in a very different way from, say, the Green Lantern. The Green Lantern book was, to me, like the most straightforward, similar to last week. But I appreciated it more because I wasn't reading the same thing five times in a row. It was just Green Lantern being like, oh my God, I'm trapped in some spiraling insanity of horribleness, versus The Flash has this very specific type of, yeah, go ahead, Pete, sorry.
Also, a shout out to Jewish, you know, like he's Jewish in that issue. Hal Jordan. He's got a yarmulke on and stuff.
Oh yeah, it is?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, there we go. That's my nightmare, I guess, missing a Jewish, canonical Jewish character in the DC universe. I'll have to check that out and take a look. Yes, the Robin one as well, I thought was really fun because you get, of course, any sort of Robins would be like, nope, we're lucid dreaming now. You can't do this to us. And they'd absolutely know what's going on because that's how they're trained.
Also, one of the best covers where it's like you see this, like, Red Hood is the Jaws, and there's just like a little rubber ducky on the top of the water. Mm-hmm. Just unbelievable image. That was so cool.
Yeah, and the Shazam one I really liked as well because we get the focus on Mary Marvel and her insecurities about being Shazam. I thought that was really good. And just the rhythm of that issue in terms of how they hit her being trapped in a nightmare, I thought was very interesting and very different. So overall, if you've been curious to check out this event, I think week two is definitely the way to go. But read Night Terrors number one and check it out and see if you're interested, because fun stuff so far.
Also, like, you know, Shazam dealing with the nightmare that is the limo driver. Like, sometimes on a prom or a big event, you have this, like, special thing. But if you have an awful limo driver, they can just ruin a whole event. You know what I mean? Oh, just, God. Like, totally just make it
is
the worst.
Is this something that happened to you, I'm getting?
No, I'm just that's what happened in the comic. And I was just like, you know, I can ruin it. You know.
Okay.
Also, we saw in Logan, he was a pretty crappy limo driver. You know what I mean?
Like, what would you do if you rented a limo and you found out Wolverine was your driver?
First off, I'd be super excited. You know what I mean? I'm riding in the front the whole fucking time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Fuck the back. It's me and Logan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. First time adventures. In a limo, Mr. Howlett.
James Howlett III?
Yeah.
What's up, bro?
All right, why don't we move on from Night Terrors and talk about The Lonesome Hunters, The Wolf Child, number one, from Dark Horse Comics by Tyler Crook. This is the second series following an old dude with a sword, the young girl he has teamed up with, and the evil birds that are after them. That's simplifying it in a big way. I described it this way on the live show a little bit, but it's kind of like The Goon meets Hellboy, which It seems like it would be repetitive, but they are two very different tones, and I think this gels them together with Tyler Crook's beautiful art throughout. Very excited to see this book back again. What do you think about this kickoff issue?
Yeah, I mean, first off, the last kind of panel really takes a bloody, crazy turn, but just such an interesting setup. I really love the world. I really loved everything that was happening. It was so interesting. Also, the mask kid really was kind of crazy. But man, the art style and the art really set this creative, complex tone that was just such a cool book, especially after going through all the Night Terror. This was such a kind of interesting, different kind of take as far as color wheel and everything. So really impressed with this book from start to finish.
Web of Carnage, number one from Marvel, written by Ram V with Christos Gage, art by Francesco Bana and Zay Carlos. I'm going to say something very negative up front. I am increasingly frustrated with the way that Marvel is numbering their issues, because I read this being like, okay, we're kicking off yet another Carnage series. But nope, this is actually the last issue of the previous series that they've numbered number one. That's annoying.
And then kicking off Carnage number one after this.
Right. Like, so that makes total sense. They got to sell comics. That's their job. Sell.
But it's like, listen, we have all these drippy comics that we need to sell. Death throws some number ones
big out. Big drips. I'm a back over here.
Yeah, Carnage is drippy. Venom is drippy. Mm-hmm. It's all.
You want a Scream comic? We'll make a Scream comic. You guys tired of that? What about Red Goblin? He's also a Carnage.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a ton of action in this. I mean, obviously, if you're going to get a Venom and Carnage book, it's going to be a lot of action. They do deliver on that. The Venom versus Kraven stuff in this issue is awesome. Then you kind of get Carnage action everywhere. So I was really impressed with the pace of this, and you get a ton in here. A lot happens in this issue. Really sets up what's happening next in a cool way. So. All the drippiness aside, I think this is great. You know, don't let the drip fool you. You have some real content behind it.
Yes, I did. To your point, I did like a bunch of the stuff that happened in here. This is setting up a lot of Extreme Venomverse stuff and End of the Venomverse and all of these other things that are going on with the drippy part of Marvel. I will say, just to get one specific plot point that I was surprised it didn't go in this direction. So most of this book is taken up with Carnage is traveling. Carnage, who now doesn't have Cletus Kasady anymore, he's just a costume, is traveling through the multiverse. And he finds Morlun, who was left at the end of Spider-Man number 6 or 7, I forget which issue it was, where he is now cut off from the web of life. He's cut off from the inheritors. He doesn't have any power or anything like that. So finds him, and Morlun is like, if only I had some power that tapped into the web of life. And Carnage is like, you have some interesting inheritor power. I want that. And you can see where this is going if you haven't read the book. At the end of the book, they're like, well, goodbye, see you never. I was like, what?
Wait, what? No, we got to go on to another story. We can't.
Hold on.
Cards number second. One coming next. Yeah.
How did this book not end up with Morlun in the Carnage symbiote? Like, my mind is boggled. Like, and that is like, these are two characters that I don't love, but if you're going to do something that's a big threat, sure, throw Morlun, a vampire who eats Spider-Man, in the Carnage outfit, who hates Venom and Spider-Man. Seems like a no-brainer. But I guess that's not what we're doing.
Oh, well. That's not what we're doing.
Nope.
Why would you think that's what we were doing?
I mean, that was the entire issue was leading up to that, and it never happened, but there we go. Anyway, let's move on and talk about Catfight number 2 from IDW, written by Andrew Wheeler, art by Elias Krizaeus. This is about a thief who has been implicated in his aunt's murder, I believe. And there are a bunch of cat thieves who are on his tail. This is basically like, what was the movie? Was it Money Train? What was it called? The one with... the one with Brad Pitt, where he's on the train, Bullet Train, and he's just like various people are just trying to kill him the entire time.
Yeah, yeah, you got me. I thought you were going to say Knives Out, and then I wasn't sure what you were.
That's what this issue is like.
I thought you were going to say Money Talks. I was like, what are you talking about?
Bullet Train.
Bullet Train.
Very fun. Yeah, I'm enjoying this book.
I agree with you. That's a great comparison, because there's all these kind of like assassin type thief people. Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns. You think you understand what's going on, but then it keeps getting heightened and heightened and heightened and heightened. And this poor person like just keeps barely making it past one person to then have to fight another person. So it's very intense. Almost dies like every couple of panels. I love the art style. I think it's a cool kind of juxtaposition of like little cartoony for all the insane action that kind of gives it a nice kind of like tone to it, that I really appreciate. I'm having a blast with this, and I think I'm excited to see what kind of happens and find out more about, what's going on.
What If Dark Loki, number one from Marvel, written by Walter Simonson, art by Scott Eaton. So if you are confused about what the concept of What If Dark could be, considering What If gets very dark, the idea here is, what if Loki straight up murdered Thor, got his hammer, and then proceeded to murder literally everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, what if Loki didn't try to ever be a good person and was just dark Loki?
Right.
Like, what if Loki just didn't give a fuck?
All due respect to this team. These are Walter Simonson, one of the best writer artists.
Legend.
Of all time. Scott Eaton, great, doing a great job of like channeling Walter Simonson a little bit through the art. What is this? because what if is this supposed to be this idea of like, we do a little twist to the Marvel universe and then we follow this thread as it goes. And this is like, what if Loki just fucking ripped shit to pieces? It ends with like the heat death of the universe, which is just very over the top. Am I wrong? I mean, what did you think of this one, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is I don't like what ifs to begin with.
Okay.
So then this is like, what if Loki was an asshole more than he normally is? I was like, I guess Marvel's just like, who's got ideas and how can we do them? Yeah, I mean, I love the action. There's tons of action in this. The art does a great job of bringing you into these insane ideas and seeing these glimpses of kind of horrible ideas, but like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is kind of fun to see if Loki didn't give a fuck about anybody. So, okay.
Yeah, all I right. guess I'm just, this feels like this isn't even necessarily like DC Dark Multiverse level, which was still, what if we changed one thing and that turned everything horrible? This is just Loki goes on a killing rampage for 20 pages or so, which is not necessarily to me a what if concept. That's not, I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll become clearer when we read the next What If Dark, which is coming out next week, and see what the concept is there. But I'm having trouble understanding this because, to the point that we already said, and we've talked about a lot on the show, what ifs are already dark because they'll start with things like, what if Spider-Man's costume was green? And then by the end, Aunt May is dead, you know, like that is the arc of a what if, is you change one thing and then it spirals out into really dark things happening. This doesn't feel like a spiral. This starts at 11 and it ends at 11, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, Spirit World, number three from DC Comics, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Henning. This is following this new character who's teamed up with Constantine and is trying to get Cassandra Cain Batgirl out of the Spirit World. We get a big battle scene in this issue as it all comes together and we find out what Batgirl's connection to the Spirit World is. Pete, as a Miyazaki fan, I feel like you got to be loving this series, right? Because this is right over the plate for that.
Yes, this is amazing. Also, this is such a fun difference between the night terrors. This is so bright. So the colors jump off the page. This is such a cool story that is so different from what's happening in DC. I love this book. I'm having such a great time. It just makes me so happy, this team up here where we get Constantine and fighting with magic and fun. You know, Batgirl is in the mix, and then like Batgirl is like, yo, I'll let this cat vampire person suck my blood, but consent is important. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, we got to talk this out a little bit. And I love all that. That's all great stuff and very cool and creative. And, yeah, I just think overall this is a hell of a package. Plus, you get an old lady with a dragon cane also in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. I'm loving all of this. This is just it's a lot of fun.
It is very fun, and I know I called out Miyazaki, but it's also just like a mashup of different influences in here. You can feel like a little bit of Sailor Moon and things like that definitely. Sometimes. And
without the kind of weirdish.
Yeah. I know what you're getting at. Anyway, it's very fun. Definitely pick it up. Next up, Bum Justin isn't here because I threw this in specifically for him, but The Rocketeer in the Den of Thieves, number one from IDW.
This does feel weird that it's in here.
Mm-hmm. Written by Stephen Moody, art by David Messina. This is following the adventures of the Rocketeer in Hollywood, as, of course, he tussles with a bunch of Nazis who also have rocket packs, or at least that's the path that he's headed on. Pete, you know, Justin, in this case, big Rocketeer fan, but what did you think about this one?
Yeah, this felt like, well, you know, too bad JT Sizz isn't here, but if we could channel JT Sizz. No, I'm not going to try to do that. I just think for me, like, it was hard to see Nazis rocking the Rocketeer stuff, you know? It's like when they made Captain America a Nazi, and I was like, fuck all of this. Stop ruining my childhood, you assholes. So it was a little rough to kind of witness that. I wish I could kind of mind erase that kind of moment. But man, the art is great. And if you like The Rocketeer, I think you'll like this. I'm really having a hard time shaking that whole fucking,
You always have a problem with Nazis, which is fair.
But the relationship stuff was sweet. The date moment was nice.
Very fun. So. The art from David Messina, it's a little bit reminiscent of the Dodsons, I would say, in particular. Yeah. So if you like that style. And it's old school. It's sweet. It's a little bit corny, but that's what it's supposed to be for the Rocketeer. So they channel that very, very nicely. Scarlet Witch, number six from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Lorenzo Tometa and Sarah Pacelli. In this issue, somebody who has been very, very wronged by the Kree and the Skrulls, potentially, ends up at Scarlet Witch's Red Door, which leads her directly to her son, Wiccan, who is married to Hulkling and in the unified Kree-Skrull Empire. So as we do with every issue of this title, we are flashing to an aspect of the Scarlet Witch's relationships and her history. What'd you think about this one?
Steve Orlando is killing this book. It is so creative and so much fun. This is a great idea and really well executed. I love the whole team on this, the art and the writing. They're having a blast. They're having a great time. We kind of get this amazing mom-dad moment in this book. Not to spoil anything, but oopsies. But man, just... I love this book. I think this is just such a cool, cool, creative idea and so well executed in the Marvel universe. It's one of my favorites, and kudos to the team behind this.
So good. Every issue is... I love the done-in-one issues. I was a little bummed when they went into a multi-issue arc, so I'm so happy to see them back with that. My only hesitance, this is nothing against Lorenzo Tometa's art, which is very good, but I wish... they would wait for Sarah Pacelli. Like, I'd be happy to take a little time, let the book come out a month or two later, if it could be all done by Steve Orlando and Sarah Pacelli, because it feels like this such unique pairing of artist and writer here. I know that's not how comics work, but I wish they did.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah, can't always get what you want. Star Signs number three from Image Comics, written by Saladin Unmed, art by Megan Levins. This is about a world where the Zodiac,
like the there one. You go.
Thank you. The Zodiac has disappeared from the sky, and instead people are showing up with Zodiac powers. There are good Zodiacs and bad Zodiacs here. They're fighting in the woods. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the artist. This is kind of, I love this. It almost has a She-Ra quality to the, I was going to say animation, but just to the panels.
If you shake the pages fast enough, they get
If you flip like them fast enough, it's like animation.
It's like the world's worst.
Yeah, the art is really great. I love it. It's a very interesting idea. It's fun to kind of see the, you know, what each person is going to be. But man, that's a rough birthday party that kid has, where you're just about to blow out the candles and your whole family dies in front of you. That's a tough birthday.
Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying this book. This is a good way of coming at a superhero team in a new way. It feels very X-Men-ish, at least at the beginning here.
Yeah, great.
So, yeah, we'll see how it pans out. But I'm having
fun
so
far. What sign are you?
Scorpio. How about you?
Yeah, what a Scorpio thing to say. Oh, my God.
Woof. What are you?
I don't know what that means. I'm a Leo. Like, you didn't know that. Man. Come on, man. Come on.
Come on. I'm a lion.
A lion and a dragon, dude.
The Hunger and the Dust, number one from IDW, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Chris Wildgoose. This is about a world where orcs and humans are forced to work together because of an incoming threat that certainly seems to be vampires, though it's not said explicitly what's going on here. I really dug this. This felt to me maybe not quite as dark, but along the lines of a Rick Remender book, just in terms of, it reminded me a little bit of Seven to Eternity, but not quite as nihilistic, you know, just because you got this dark thing that's looming on the side. There's some good fairy tale qualities. There's the, this is Rick Remender, but there's a little bit of a, like a Romeo and Juliet thing going on here. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, this reminded me a little bit of like Ascender, Descender, where there's this big story happening, and we also have this kind of love thing happening as well. I really, really like this. When Zalba was talking about it, he kind of like seemed like he was questioning his review, like maybe he didn't stand behind it. But I thought this was a very interesting, cool story. I love the art, this kind of like thing of like people coming together for a bigger battle. I'm a sucker for that kind of shit. Orcs and humans got to work together to fight these maybe evil vampires, as Zalbatron was hinting at, but we will see. But yeah, just cool to have kind of like bigger theme things going on in this. And I really love the art style. So yeah, I was thought for number one, this did an amazing job of setting up this world, getting you excited for more.
Antarctica, number one from Image Comics, written by Simon Burks, art by Willie Roberts. This is about a woman who is trying to track down her dad, and of course she tracks him down to Antarctica, or at least she thinks so. There's a big twist at the end that really changes it in a classic Image Comics Top Cow last page reveal that reveals the spoiler sci-fi premise of the book. I will say there are aspects of this that I liked, and I think the part that I liked the best was before they got to the sci-fi premise in Antarctica.
Classic, yeah. The kind of whole premise of this woman kind of like starting out her life and not having anybody around to help guide her, and then the people who are supposed to be doing that are disappearing at a high rate. Yeah, it's this, again, this interesting premise of like this woman on her own, and then this guy Jim comes in, and like you're like, oh man, this is cool setup, and then Jim dies and she has to start, and you're like, oh fuck man, I was really liking this world that we set up, and now I gotta fucking move on from all this. But I do think though that the bigger story is very interesting. It's hard though, because like when she got to Antarctica, and I just wanted to kind of go back, the way you paused after you said ant and then Arctica, it's not about ants at all. It's Antarctica, the place.
What is this? An Arctica for ants?
Right. You were like, this book, Antarctica. Yeah. So I just think that like, I think it's a very cool story, and I hope that we, because it's like the, cool. the first it's dude cool. that you see when we get to Antarctica, you're like, oh, that I want that to be the dad. And then there's this other guy, and you're like, ooh, but I want that to be the dad. And then you're just kind of like, it's not going to be that easy. But
Well, let me ask you a question, because this, the way that we're talking about this seems very similar to the Sirens book that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
What do you think the deal here is? Is it that these books need to, whatever they want to be, they need to introduce it at the beginning? Are they trying to hide the premise too much?
I think they're fast-forwarding too much to what they think they need to sell the book. You know, they think they need to get to the big reveal at the end, or the big action moments. But I think what they're doing is they're fast-forwarding past these amazing story, like the real heart of the story, the real reason these people are this way. Like her father never came home. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. that destroyed her. And then she found this father type figure and he died. And that destroyed her again. You know, so it's this like, yeah, but they're like, well, fuck all that. Fuck all that. We got to get to this. And it just kind of, I think the fast forwarding part kind of can be a little bit like, yeah, I think that's the,
yeah, I think it's both things, right? Like, I think it's pacing issues is what we're saying, because yeah. I understand the impulse there. It's very hard to go into a comic book shop and be like, check out this new book, Antarctica. It's about a sad girl whose father figures keep dying and she never gets to Antarctica in the first issue versus what it is. But
you can't call Antarctica. No,
can't do that. But if just to spoil it, the concept here is she encounters some sort of like alternate universe version of herself or something like that at the end. And that ties into the mystery of what's going on with her father. But if that's the thing, In Media Res is one of my least favorite things. That's where like you start in the middle of the story and then you flash back to a period. Yeah, and the reason it's one of my least favorite things is because everybody uses it wrong. They use it to be like, here's the thing, and then link up in a way that's very obvious. Instead, you need to crash us into the middle of the story to give us that pump of action at the beginning. But we have to be like, what? What's happening? What's going on? And then have no clue until we get to that moment again. And that reveals everything. But maybe that's the way of doing these things if you want to do it. Like, start the Sirens book with she's being chased by a bunch of werewolves down the street and be like, record scratch freeze frame, how did I get here? And then you get like the emotional layering in, and then you can actually spend a little time rather than jamming it into a million monsters. Or with this Antarctic book, start with her being like, okay, this is weird, that's me over there, what's going on, hold on, you got to know some stuff about me first, you know. And then
I don't know about all that, but I do think
as long as there's a record scratch and a freeze frame, I'm good with
that. Love that. You love that trope. You want to see it more. Whoa,
hold up there. This is crazy.
What?
This is crazy.
This is insane. I think what your problem is the titling. Instead of Antarctica, it should be like, men are shitty, they'll never come back to you. You know what I mean? Like, that would be a little
I think
more.
My problem here is that Antarctica is a difficult word for everybody to pronounce.
That's true.
Sure. Here's a word that's easy to pronounce. Loki, number two from Marvel, written by Dan Waters, art by Jermaine Peralta. This is following this premise is gonna sound crazy when I say it out loud, but Loki had a ship that was made out of finger and toenail cuttings, and three pieces have fallen off and they're evil and he's trying to get them back. Sounds crazy, right? Except this book rules. It's so good. It feels like we talked about with the first issue. It feels more like a lost Norse myth than it does even a Marvel comic, but they gel the two tones together really well. And in this one, we're getting like classic, really dark Norse myth stuff going on with a bunch of dwarves that use a piece of the ship and it goes so poorly for them. We get a gender bent Loki once again, which we haven't seen in a while, almost with no explanation other than the fact that it is what it is, which I love that detail as well. This book is so good. This is yet another classic Loki run in the making.
Yeah, I love this book. Artistically, it's really impressive. The art style, the action, all the kind of madness that is packed in here in such a cool, unique way. Very enjoyable. Cannot wait to read more of this book.
Yeah, particularly if you liked Kieran Gillen's run on Loki, this is definitely one to check out. I think you're going to really dig this as well. Earth Divers, number 8 from IDW, written by Stephen Graham Jones, art by Riccardo Brucielli. This is taking things in a different direction with the second arc of the book, with somebody who has traveled back in time to the Ice Age. And in this issue, she is on the run through the Ice Age, trying to use her knowledge both of history as well of science to navigate the deadliest period in planet Earth. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's fucking heartbreaking. You know what I mean? It's hard to, you know, see all these Native Americans die horribly, losing their heads like that. So yeah, it's rough, but it's also really amazing and artistically, I love the art style and stuff like that. So really cool.
Yeah, I like this book as well. I'm not 100% sure yet how this arc ties into the last arc or the overall idea of the book. I'd love to get some clarity on that soon, but otherwise it's a good read. And in terms yes. of Lady is Trapped in the Past of the Ice Age, that's working for me.
Yeah.
Immortal X-Men number 13 from Marvel, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Lucas Wernick. On the live show, I mentioned that there was one book that I threw in the stack specifically because I wanted to read it and didn't want to forget to not read it. Pete, you may be surprised to learn this is that book.
Oh, wait, you mean the book about your favorite fucking character that was just shoehorned into this because I fucking hate this run? What, Alex? Do tell.
I love this. I love this so much.
Oh, man. You know what's my favorite part about this book?
What? Everybody standing around and talking? Yes! Like really trying to figure out the politics?
What a great idea for a comic book. Let's just think about this. You know, real life, we don't get to see council meetings where people stand around and argue about trivial, stupid shit. But what if we turned into a comic book and then had people standing around and it's so bad the tree can't even fucking take it? The tree who sees all life happening around it and just got to sit there cannot sit through this comic without losing its fucking mind. I feel very
seen. Here's what I'm going to throw out at you. That's the thing that I think is interesting that I'm curious to get your take on, if you could like distance yourself from your anger a bit. I thought this issue was awesome. Obviously, I was like, well, I gotta read. Cypher is on the cover here. I can't not read this issue. Come on. And this is all the Quiet Council is dealing with the fallout of Sins of Sinister, dealing with the fallout of a lot of stuff that's going on in the Marvel Universe. Like you said, it's just the Quiet Council. We don't go outside the Quiet Council area. The entire issue is them fighting and conniving and trying to figure out ways of getting around each other. But the thing that's happening in the background here that I really thought you would appreciate, and I love like the amount of tension and emotion this is bringing, is they're starting to realize that this is fucking wrong. Like, that is what this issue is all about. Is like you're saying, Krakoa is like, no, you've gone in the wrong direction. Cypher admits to the things that he did with Moira MacTaggert, with Destiny, with Mystique, with everybody, to Professor X, and he's like, I did the wrong thing, but I did it because this is so fucked, the thing that you've done with Krakoa right now, in the interest of making a utopia, in the interest of saving the mutant race, that I couldn't do anything else. And at the end of the issue, spoiler here, but Krakoa sucks Cypher into the pit and deeper below the pit because he's like, I got to keep him safe because bad things are about to really go down. In one point of this issue, and again, Pete, you had to love this, Professor X takes off his lollipop head and cries, and he's like, what have I done? What have I done to the X-Men, to mutants? Oh my God, I have gone so far wrong from what I'm supposed to be. I love that because that has always been the tension of this run. At no point of this run have you been supposed to look at what's going on in Krakoa and be like, I think this is going great. This is great. This is great. There's no problems here. This is legit a utopia. And it's all the cracks are like earthquake faults at this point. That's what we're getting into, this Fall of X event. And if they deliver on that, I think that's awesome. I was very hesitant about this, getting into this event. But now everything that I've seen, all these little pieces they're throwing in there, so exciting to like blow up this Krakoa era in a big way and point out all the things that have gone horribly wrong. That to me, there is nothing more classic X-Men than let me finish.
Get off your fucking soapbox with this bullshit. No.
Let me finish what I'm saying, because this is what drew me to the X-Men initially, the idea that these heroes were such massive screw-ups that the absolute worst things that could happen to them were always the things that they had caused themselves, and always the things that from different directions, if they hadn't all done pieces wrong, wouldn't have led to this absolute apocalypse that's coming their way.
Okay, I'm glad that you're getting this moment where you are realizing your team is a shitty team, but I'm not having fun with this.
I always realize that.
All right, well, great. I'm glad you're getting confirmation that the X-Men suck as a group.
Angst is built into the best of the X-Men. What book have you been reading?
This book is just basically saying, Pete was right. This is a shitty idea, and now we have to shut it all down.
That's the thing, though. It was not a shitty idea because that was baked into it. Like, that's the thing that I'm trying to get through to you from the very beginning.
Dumb. It's the fucking giving tree. If the tree's going, fuck all you motherfuckers, I'm out. You know, if the giving tree could get up and walk away, it's basically just saying, like, the Quiet Council is a shitty idea. We weren't good enough to pull that off. This whole fuck island is a shitty idea.
It's not the giving up. It's not saying, no, it's the characters. It's not the writers being like, oops, we made a mistake. It's the writers years ago, Jonathan Hickman, when he sets it up, not being like, yes, this is what the X-Men need to be. It's about, we're going to put them in a place where we push them exponentially forward in this direction and then see how they as characters deal with it. What?
Great use of X talking about the X-Men.
Thank you.
Exponentially.
I don't know how many more times we could discuss this, but several.
Yeah. Several to go. Apparently, yeah, doesn't get old, but I was just like, yeah, this is bad, guys, and I've had to deal with this for a long time. I'm glad the tree gets it, but as soon as we can end this Quiet Council and rip off Lollipop's head and get back to the fucking X-Men, then
going to get back to them.
Great, kill them
it's
off.
It's going
then.
To be completely wrecked and destroyed. By the way, you realize you sound like William Stryker right now, right? Like, you sound like an X-Men villain. Like, kill all the X-Men. They're wrong. This utopia they have is wrong.
Don't put
get
stuff in my mouth. I didn't create Fuck Island. I didn't have to sit there and do all this.
Explain those giant mutant-killing robots behind you then, Pete. What are they for?
I don't know what you're talking about, man. These are just my friends.
These are my buds.
These are just my buddies. I created them so we can hang out. I don't know what to tell you, man. I'm not having a good time. Krakoa's not having a good time. And, you know, luckily Cypher, lucky he's that safe. He's cool. Yeah, he's lucky. He's very
he's cool.
lucky.
You said it. That's all I wanted. I said it. Pete. Cypher's cool. - Pete LePage.
Wait. No, wait.
Dark Ride. We got to move on. Dark Ride Image Comics.
No, because there's something I wrote in my notes that I just wanted to write. I just wrote down Alex liked
it
because
Cypher's cool again. Did you write that?
No, Alex liked it because Translato was there and he helped.
Translato. Yes, that was the whole reason that I put it in. I was like, Cypher's on the cover.
Oh my god.
Oh, like you haven't picked up something just because a character you liked was on the cover. Come on.
I'm sure. Come on.
Let he who was out without sin cast the first.
I'm not in an ivory tower of perfection throwing stones.
There you go. The only one in that ivory tower of perfection is Cypher. Dark Ride number 7 from Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andre Bresson. This is picking off the big cliffhanger of the last issue, where we finally got to meet the evil Walt Disney-esque character who has been running the horror theme park. So the promise was we were going to get some big answers this issue. Guess what? We don't, but some shit goes down anyway. The tension and in this book is palpable. Reading every issue. I will say, as a reader, I think I need to start getting some answers pretty quickly. I am very much on this dark ride no matter what.
It's too scary. That black and white flashback with the blood red. Oh, no, thank you. That was my first nope moment. Like, this is a great story, but it's just too scary for me. When he calls the daughter, and then you think maybe the daughter's going to be safe, but then you see what's in the room with the daughter. No, too scary. Stop. I want to get off this dark ride.
You can't. You got to take it all the way around, Pete. All the way around. Great book. Definitely check it out. Star Trek number 10 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Mike Feehan. This is, I believe, the final issue of this series before the Day of Blood crossover kicks off. And we are wrapping up a big arc that is going all the way back to the Dominion War and tying into a lot of stuff that we have been dealing with this book so far. This is one of my favorite issues of this book in a while. It's big, it's action-y, so there's some nice twists for fans of Star Trek in here, as well as setting up the crossover to come. What'd you think, Pete?
It's just another great Star Trek issue. I mean, we've been talking a lot about amazing Star Trek books, and I've just been really impressed with the quality that we've been reading here. It just continues to be really cool and very enjoyable.
Great.
I don't know what else to say about these.
Yeah, I am excited for the Day of Blood crossover. I'm curious to see how that happens, how it potentially changes things going forward. Should be very interesting. Groot number 3 from Marvel, written by Dan Abnett, art by Damian Cusero. This takes place in the past. We've got Groot and two little other Groots who have been captured. Captain Marvel has been also taken down by these chainsaw monsters who are populating his planet, as well as an evil Groot who is holding them all hostage. And, Groot is teaming up with Yondar, a Lady Yondu, to try to save them. This is a very enjoyable book. I really like this.
I fucking love this book. I love this book. It is just so much fun. The thing about when I was reading it, though, I was like, fucking Captain Marvel's still around, but we got to kill off Miss Marvel. That's fucking bullshit. Other than that, I'm having such a great
back
time
of the day. This is
I'm having such a great time with this. Artistically, this is just such a cool, creative book. Love all the kind of plant life creatures that are just animated and fun. You would think having a bunch of creatures that just repeat the same words would be annoying, but I'm not annoyed by it. I'm having a great time. I think it's very cool and well done. This is just a blast.
Totally agree. Something Epic, number 3 from Image Comics by Szymon Kudrowski. This is following a kid who maybe is hallucinating things, maybe not, but probably is, and it's become increasingly clear to me over the course of these issues that this is probably about the development of an artist, and a comic book artist in particular, because he has all these ideas in his head that are trying to get out, both the dark and the light, superheroes and cartoons and other characters, and he's trying to settle on it. You've got this is phenomenal. Just like particularly this issue, I think really brings the emotional gravity of what's going on here into clarity. And I really appreciated that. What'd you think?
Yeah, the spoilers, the mom dying in this issue was so powerful, so well done, so amazing. Yeah, it's one of those things where the title, I'm like, all right, something epic. Let's see something epic. You know, I kind of have my arms crossed, but every issue it wins me over. It's really impressive. Also, like you have this, like you think the character is winning. They're like, man, I found some peace. And then this person's like, hey, I think you dropped your darkness. Let me give this back to you. It's like, no. But yeah, I'm having a great time with this. It's really impressive what this continues to pull off. The shading and the coloring, though, are creepy AF, man. This is some crazy shit. And
it's gorgeous mixed media art because you're getting a lot of different types of characters. The story is very good. And you know, whether it turns out to be something fantasy or something more realistic, as I expect it is, kind of doesn't matter. It's about the artistic process either way. And if you're a comic book fan, you have to check this one out. And I assume most of you listening to this probably are. Hellboy in Love, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden, art by Matt Smith. This is the final issue of this series, I believe, as Hellboy and his new beau have finally hooked up. And she tracks down the artifact she's been looking for the entire time. Do they stay together? Do they break up? That, to me, was the big tension of the series, and I was very surprised about the direction that things went in. What'd you think, Pete?
Well, first off, I love this story. I love the kind of battle that goes down here. It's a classic kind of Hellboy where you think maybe they're going to be all right. And then this kind of like all powerful witch comes down from above to fuck their entire world up. But let's talk about the love story a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
This happened really fast. Okay. I needed it to slow down for me to buy into this love story. I mean, 5 issues, they're, you know, all of a sudden they're in love. They're saying they're in love with each other out loud. I was like, puff your brakes a little bit here, guys. Like, I would really love this if they took more time with it. Like the idea of a girl who grew up loving like horror movies with her dad. They would go and watch these horror movies and fall in love with these characters and the kind of history of these characters that pushed her into this love of archaeology and digging up things up and stuff like that is a perfect person for Hellboy to fall in love with. And it's a great story. But because it's so rushed and it's like, yeah, I love monsters, so I love Hellboy and we're in love. I was just like, I would have loved this if it didn't happen so quickly. I think it's a good idea, but Pete, I just would have liked to sit in it a little bit. You know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying, and I get it. But the way you described it, let me compare it this way to you. Let's sure. say you, Pete LePage, met a cheesesteak girl, right?
Oh, my
if
God.
You met her...
Just, my heart just sank. The whole setup of this, I was like, you think she's out there?
Well, that's what I'm
you
saying.
Somebody's
is if you
out there
met
like
her,
that?
You'd tell oh her you God. Loved her so quickly.
So
you'd be like,
you're right.
So
you're
quickly. Right. You're like, my entire life, I've waited for this to meet this cheesesteak girl.
Yeah.
And to be
but
clear to anybody listening,
like,
I'm saying
a
girl
who's
literally
girl,
like a garbage plate.
You know,
sure.
you know, that would also work for me. You
yeah.
know?
As long as she's some sort of cheesy chopped meat person, you'd be like, pucker up,
someone
baby.
Who has a passion for food like I do is really what I'm looking for.
Oh, you're talking about, right. I was talking about literally somebody who's made out of food. Oh. Like Hellboy.
Not Pizza the Hut. Not Pizza the Hut situation. Come
but
on,
a girl,
dude.
But a girl. I mean, or whatever you want. I don't want to judge.
No, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, okay. When you say it like that, yes. But yeah.
Yes, actually. Anyway, this is great. I love a Valentine in the Hellboy universe. I love seeing this era of Hellboy. Very fun.
I do too.
The Amazing Spider-Man number 29 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by Ed McGuinness. In this issue, Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson are on the run with Doc Ock's tentacles. Doc Ock, meanwhile, is torturing Norman Osborn and trying to find out what his long-range evil plan is. Of course, we know Norman Osborn's long-range evil plan is nothing because he's really trying to be a good guy. The evil has been taken out of him by the Sin Eater. There's a bunch of twists by the end of this issue. Pete, I know we've been, you and I in particular, have been very negative on this podcast about Amazing Spider-Man. What'd you think about this one?
Well, I think this is a cool, I like the kind of the teams that we got here. I think Spider-Man hanging out with J. Jonah Jameson kind of dealing with these Doc Ock arms are fun, right? That's kind of a fun, odd couple that they're together like that. And then kind of having Doc Ock like yell at Norman Osborn and be like, admit that you're wrong is also fun. But it's hard to enjoy it because I'm kind of like, do you think Mary Jane is happy with this new family or right. is it like, does she feel weird now that she mm-hmm. saw Spider-Man again? Like it's hard to focus on all the cool stuff that's happening because I'm still, reeling from what's happened. So it's hard, but this is enjoyable. And if I could shut off that part of my brain and just enjoy it, this is great art, great Spider-Man story stuff going on here. And it's kind of fun that J. Jonah Jameson, Spider-Man kind of have a nice little fun moment together. They kind of, you know.
I agree. This felt like a much more focused issue of this book. As you're saying, you basically have like an A plot and a B plot that are eventually going to tie together. I like the place that we end up with the Doc Ock's tentacles and Spider-Man spoiler here, but he's like, Spiders also have eight arms. And we're like, we all know that Spider-Man. Thank you.
Hey, I don't know if you guys are aware of this. He's like tapping the panel. Like, hey, you out there.
Which is fine. Like that's a fine place for Spider-Man to be in. On the Doc Ock and Norman Osborn thing, I do think there is something interesting in terms of Norman Osborn being like, please, no, I don't have an evil plan right now. Well, Doc Ock is in this place where he says memories taken for him back from the Superior Spider-Man days. So he doesn't know that he was a hero in the same way that Norman is trying to forget that he's a villain. So that's an interesting pairing.
It's interesting. Yeah.
It's interesting dramatically. That said, same way you are with Mary Jane, like I talked about with the last issue, my thing is like, I don't need to see Norman Osborn as a good guy. I don't need Norman Osborn, Doc Ock, and J. Jonah Jameson all wrestling with like, oh, we really like this Spider-Man guy. What do we do here? Like, that's something that I would be happy to get back to basics. And there's a hint that maybe we're heading in that direction at the end of this issue. And that is okay with me. I think there are Spider-Man villains that I'm all right with seeing a bit of the humanity in. When the Rhino, in particular, who's this Frankenstein figure anyway, is really wrestling with being a good guy. Same thing with the Sandman. I think there's been some really interesting stuff there. But in particular, Doc Ock and Norman Osborn are two characters that, in my mind, should always be villains. Like, they should not be good guys. You could play around with that a little bit, but that's nothing that you could sit in for a good long period of time. It's not a long-term strategy. They're bad guys. They're villains. That's where they need to live. So I don't know. We'll see if we're getting back there. In Hell We Fight, number 2 from Image Comics, written by John Layman, art by Jock. This is about a bunch of folks who have died and are in hell. And at the end of the last issue, they thought they were getting some ice cream in hell, but it turns out they actually got an angel. And this issue, we find out exactly what that means. They go on a mission. Their mission is they're going to try to get to heaven, get the angel back to heaven, and get some real ice cream. And meanwhile, they have a bunch of demons on their tail. This book is endlessly creative and endlessly fun.
Oh, man, what a great way to put that. Yes, I totally agree. Some really cool things, like using the halo as like a weapon was such a cool thing in hell. I love that. Just In Hell We Fight is such a great title, that and is this continues to be just a really interesting comic that explores different things. I like the little demon character. I like the angel character. I'm having a blast with this. I'm also excited to see what ice cream's going to be like in heaven. Like, she teases like amazing flavors, and my mind is like, oh my God, you think there's like,
what's your ultimate heaven ice cream flavor, Pete?
Oh, I mean, that's hard. I mean, it's insane to even think about. Like, could a garbage plate be a flavor of ice cream? Would that be good? I don't know.
This is, you know, heaven, I mean? You're talking about?
Yeah,
heaven?
I mean, Choco Taco is one of my favorite kind of like ice cream things. Like, you know.
Sure, that's an ice cream that exists on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Although like, not probably anymore. They took it away, right?
They did, but it's probably still in heaven.
It probably is.
You know, you think I can get the McRib up there? Like, what's up, heaven?
Oh, my
like,
God.
Like, come on.
They have all
Let me
the
get a Grimace shake. Let me get a Grimace shake. Come on.
Coke 2. They got Coke 2 up there. They got Orbitz.
Do they
Orbitz,
have the
my
real
favorite
Coke
drink from 1993.
Coke is in the Coke, you know what I mean? Like the old Coke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody's super high on Coke in heaven. Just snorting it straight off of
Come
Angel
on,
Lakes.
Heaven. What's up?
Yeah, angels are like, put the cocaine on my halo. We'll do a roundy.
Oh,
call
wow.
it a roundy.
That's dark, bro. You know, they do call it snow. You know, heaven's real white. You know, like what would be, you think Coke is just, you could just sniff a cloud up there? Like, what's up?
Oh, probably. Wow. We should have.
Your eye twitched with the thought of that. You're just like, oh.
Hey.
This is 100% pure. Oh,
gotta get there faster. Gotta get there faster, man. All right. That got dark. The Great British Bump Off, number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by John Allison, art by Max Sarin. This is the final issue of this book. It was about a murder mystery that takes place in a Great British Bake Off style show. I found this book very delightful. I liked how the mystery tied up. I thought they did a neat job of actually making it make sense as you read the book. It isn't something that comes out of nowhere. You definitely could have picked up on the clues. The character designs are very fun from Max Sarin. I really like this team. They've been doing a lot of really fun short mysteries like this, and I hope there's more coming because I had a good time.
I agree. It's got kind of like a fun Disney kind of feel to it. I just the art style, and yeah, this is just a well done. Oh, like, yeah, that guy makes sense. Yeah, just great. Just kind of fun. And yeah, I thought it was just kind of like cute enough, just zany enough twists and turns. They did a great job with this book.
Yeah, definitely pick this one up in trade if you didn't get it in single issues. Next up, Deep Cuts. Number 3
Deep
from
Image Cut.
Deep Cuts from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Diego Greco. Mm-hmm. Every issue of this book is about music and it ties into not necessarily a family experience, though I think two of them were family experiences. Mm-hmm. This one very specifically is about an old jazz man who has left the tour, left the road, left the right life, and is living with his daughter and his wife. And there's another on the way, and he's got to kind of figure out what to do with his life going forward. What I really appreciate about this one in particular was how sweet it was. Each of these issues have been kind of sweet in their own way. They're not really necessarily dark tales of working in music, but this one, I expected it to go in so many different directions, and the way that it went was very heartwarming.
Yeah, I really appreciate this as a performer, as someone who enjoys like getting on the stage and doing shows. Like, I think they handled that really well of like this thing of like really feeling alive and feeling like you're doing something, you're putting something out there that people can enjoy and can bring joy to the world. And like, why wouldn't you want to get paid to do that? And wouldn't that be great? But this thing about this other life, about being a dad and being a family and that being less than a performer, I think was really cool. The way the father was just like, hey, you know, like I get just as much joy out of, you know, being here. I can still make music. I can still kind of like sing and do stuff. It just, you know, I think just finding the balance in life, I thought it was just like a cool way of talking about it and dealing talking to his daughter about, because she was just like, why, daddy, what's so big about it? I thought it was just well done. Artistically, it was really cool. The way the music kind of flows throughout this was very interesting and cool. This was a well done book.
Yeah, so far this book is 3 for 3 in my mind. Yeah. I'm really liking it quite a bit. Murder, Inc., Jagger Rose, #3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Michael Avon Oeming. Picking up in the last issue where Jagger Rose visited the Pope in this world that has been taken over by the mob. Things go very poorly in America as the remaining U.S. government tries to take things back from the mob, and nobody wants that. They really don't want that, and there's a big twist and a change for Jagger Rose by the end. This book, or at least this issue, is pretty funny.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, it's too bad we couldn't talk to this creative team about this book.
Oh, wait, we did. We had them on the show to talk about this very book. On the live show, you can go back and listen to the whole podcast interview.
That bit aside, this is just continues. I mean, the writing and the art are such a fantastic combination in this kind of cool way. I'm glad that, Philly gets some acknowledgement of being fucked over by the government again in this issue. So very cool, very well done, politically savvy. And I enjoyed it.
Last but not least, let's talk about Haunt You to the End, #2 from Image Comics, written by Ryan Cady, art by Andrea Moody. This is about a group that is traveling to the most haunted island on Earth 48 hours before it's scheduled to be destroyed to try to prove that ghosts exist. Here's a little spoiler for you. Ghosts do exist. Pete, I know you get very scared about this stuff. Were you scared by this book?
Yes and no. Haunt You Then, post-apoc kind of zombie action, if you will. Great art, very interesting story. I want to check out more, but the art had this kind of cool watercolor feel that I'm a sucker for. So yeah, this was in my wheelhouse. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is good. This is solid. I want more twists here. So far, this is going in every direction that I kind of expect it to be going in, and I want to see a little more of what's going on. But like you said, I do like the Andrea Moody art. I think it channels the feeling of a horror movie very well, but this doesn't seem too much beyond like a little bit of an aliens-inflected haunted house movie. So where's the big... Where's the big swing here?
That's what I want to
say. Where's the beef? Exactly. Exactly. You know where the beef is? It's on our Patreon, patreon.com/comicbookclub, where you can support this show. It is. We have a beef level. If you pledge $100 or more, we send you beef every month.
We don't. Don't say that, because what if somebody wants that?
Now I got to add that.
You got
to
add that.
I got to add that to the Patreon.
Where are you going to get your beef from?
Oh, my God. Where'd you get this beef from? This beef's really good. Oh, I got it from the Comic Book Club. From their Patreon. They send me beef every month.
Yeah, they got a beef hookup. It's really great.
I don't know where it comes from, but probably pretty fucked up. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Thanks for listening.